Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today as we take a look at consumer scams during this pandemic with our two regular guests, Michelle Reinenbach with us from the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. She's the Executive Policy Initiatives Advisor within the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Michelle, good to have you back.
Well, thanks for having me, Larry. It's good to be back.
Yeah, good to have you here. With her as well, Lara Sutherland, the Administrator for the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Lara, great to have you back as well.
Thanks for having us, Larry. We appreciate it.
So we will talk with these experts about new scams and maybe some old scams with a new twist. And, of course, we'll answer all of your questions as well. You think you may have been scammed? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Again, love to hear from you. Again, that number, 800-642-1234. Let's take a look at some of the emails and media posts that are promoting COVID awareness and prevention tips. And you're saying we might want to be a little wary of them. They seem to be legitimate. Michelle, do you want to take a crack at that?
Sure do. We are seeing a whole variety of things coming to consumers as it relates to COVID matters. It might be emails and scams that come by phishing emails or text messages or social media related to unemployment insurance, testing charges, contact tracing, health and safety items people are trying to purchase, charity scams, pet scams. So we have a long list to cover today, so I'll just start with the pet scams where I just left off. And we've seen a huge number of individuals adopt pets because they are at home right now and have time for them, or the companionship aspect of a small cuddly creature at home. And so consumers are also interested in purchasing pets if they can't find one at the shelter or are looking for a particular breed. And they are being scammed out of hundreds of dollars when no pet is being delivered. So this is not a new scam or situation that consumers they could be familiar with it from other times, but it's just on such an increase right now. And so consumers need to be watchful of how they are looking for a pet, and often they are being scammed out of money as it relates to the delivery of the animal and the social distancing that might happen as a result of trying to get the pet there. But in the end, no pet is being delivered, and consumers should just use established rescue or breeder organizations and not use cash or gift cards or wiring money to try and obtain a pet.
So kind of an old scam with a little bit of a new twist to it.
Yeah, and a new spike because so many shelters, for great reasons, are low on having pets, and that's a fabulous problem to have for the animals. But it's an issue where consumers might be looking for alternative means of getting a pet into the home.
Yeah. Well, you also mentioned some other scams. One was unemployment insurance, I think.
Yeah, so the Department of Workforce Development has detected almost 350 instances of identity fraud against the unemployment insurance program. And it's, you know, like we do regularly, asking for the public's help in identifying this potential fraud by reporting mail that incorrectly indicates you've applied for unemployment insurance benefits. And this ties to the potential for identity theft because someone's trying to use your information to obtain these benefits fraudulently. And so this is something where we've tried to remind consumers, train consumers to always be looking at the mail that comes into their home and react if it doesn't make sense by making contact and reporting those things. So we want to make sure that consumers help us, help Department of Workforce Development, and also protect their identities. So be a partner in protecting your identity by identifying any potential for fraud where your name might be used wrongfully. So again, reaching out there to DWD, if you receive mail and you haven't applied for any benefits or if you're being contacted in that manner.
We have a caller, Sue from Baraboo, with a question that I think relates to this. Sue, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. And here is my dilemma, can you say? So I've been home, obviously, like we all are, and I saw an ad for a backpack that would carry a pet. So I didn't order a pet, but I did order a backpack. It was ordered, and I used PayPal balance on May 3rd, and I have received correspondence back and forth from the company, which I don't know if I should say or not, but from the company, but it now is looking suspicious to me. They have provided me with a tracking number, which is invalid. I've not received the item. Can you tell me what I should do next?
So that's a good question. It's hard to know exactly where the impasse might have happened, but it sounds like you've put some thought into whether or not you've been targeted by a fraudulent company. So if you paid for it via PayPal or some other secure method, then I would go ahead and try to stop that payment and go ahead and determine and put a stop payment on that so you can figure out whether or not it's legitimate. And then I would do some research on the business that you've been corresponding with, see if there are any complaints against it with the BBB, with DAGCAP, just do some regular research and try to get online with their customer service to do some verification about how legitimate this company is and what actually is happening. And if you can't get the information that you need, then I would cancel the payment. And then if you are further concerned about whether or not your information has been jeopardized, then I would file a report with the department, and we can walk you through how we can help you protect your identity and also look into that company to see whether or not it's a scam and is targeting other Wisconsin residents.
Yeah, I'm wondering, Sue, has the money already been taken out?
Well, that's my question. I believe that it has been. And so I printed off, like from PayPal, and they say, need help. If there's a problem, make sure to contact the seller. I've contacted the seller. I'm still not getting information. I'm just suspicious because when they either reply to me, like through Facebook Messenger, they will sometimes reply to an email, but it just doesn't, you know, I'm kicking myself that I even did it.
Well, don't kick yourself. This happens to all kinds of people, and it's difficult to always know when someone's trying to take advantage of you. If you ordered a product in PayPal and you haven't gotten it, you can still pursue that with PayPal and let them know. So at least they have a record of it that this company is potentially scamming its customers. And then I would continue to pursue a customer service, but it sounds like you should call our 1-800 line and talk to someone to help you mediate the complaint if you think that you have paid to a company for an item and you haven't gotten it. You've either been scammed or there's some opportunity for mediation with the business.
And the number again is, Laura?
That's right. It's 1-800-422-7128.
1-800-422-7128 to call in. All right. Sue, I'm sorry you're having that trouble, but I bet there's a lot of folks out there who have ordered. I know somebody who ordered some masks online, and it's been a couple of months and a half, and they haven't heard anything. And so I think there's probably some more of that going on, Laura.
That's right. And the payments for these types of things should not be charged until the product has been shipped. So you should really look at the shipping criteria when you make these online purchases and make sure you understand what the shipping deadline is. With oftentimes, folks will say the shipping, you have to gather together the item, and then there's shipping time frames on top of that, and it's much longer than what you anticipated. So we always encourage people to read the fine print, determine what the return policy and the refund policies are before you make the purchase. But to your point, Larry, about the fraudulent, potential fraudulent purchases of masks, we are seeing a lot of scams, imposter scams around fake PPE. We see a lot of phishing emails that people are reporting coming into their inbox saying we have really good prices on N95 masks because those are the masks that most people want. And in fact, they don't have them. And we have a couple instances where we're looking into that. But certainly, if you're getting those emails in your inbox, if you're getting them in your social media accounts, if you're getting phone calls, you should ignore those. There's a lot of scams out there trying to get people to buy this PPE. Go to resources that you trust and that you know, and use credit cards, PayPal, mechanisms of payment that you can unring that bell if it turns out they are fraudulent and they don't have the product that they promised they had.
Taking a look at consumer protection scams during this corona pandemic, I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. Michelle Reinen, one of our guests today, Lara Sutherland, the other, both from the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection within our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Jill Nadeau, our producer today, Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network as we take a look at consumer scam issues with our two guests from the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection within the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, Michelle Reinen and Lara Sutherland. Always great to have them come by, and certainly they're ready and willing to answer your questions at 800-642-1234, email at ideas@wpr.org. There have been some scams surrounding COVID-19 testing. Should we be paying for those tests? Michelle, what do you know about that?
Yeah, so the testing for COVID-19 must be covered by private health insurance, including that cost sharing like the co-pays for the office, urgent care, and emergency department visits. And that's according to the Wisconsin Commissioner of Insurance and acts that happen federally. So if you are being charged for this, reports of charges for these services can go to the Office of Commissioner of Insurance. And we have a phone number that people can call if they are experiencing this charge. But it's always good before you file the complaint to circle back and just ask and check and make sure there isn't a billing error. But if they proceed to continue to charge or demand payment in relation to that, you can contact the Office of Commissioner of Insurance at 1-800-236-8517. But again, testing for COVID-19 should be covered and must be covered by private health insurance, including that cost sharing, copay, office visit pay that people often need to make when they are visiting a clinic, hospital, or emergency room. So consumers should not engage in making that payment and should question it at this time.
And also, there are a lot of free testing sites, and they're very efficient, and we encourage people to use them. Here in Madison and Dane County, there's a free testing site at the Alliance Center run by the National Guard. Super quick and easy and free. So you can avail yourself to that as well.
Let's take some calls. Francisco in Sister Bay, it's your turn. Thank you for calling.
Some time ago, about 2-3 days ago, I was listening to your station, and it came that the federal government got scammed in the state of Washington of hundreds of millions of dollars from that fund that they were going to send to individuals, the unemployment fund. And I want to know if you could check it out. I lost track of that. I should have called.
So money from the relief package that was scammed, are you guys familiar with that? Michelle,
that is,
are you?
Yeah, that is basically the issue that we were talking about earlier. The unemployment scam is not happening just in Wisconsin. It's happening around the country. And I think Michelle mentioned at the top of the hour that there were about 350 reports here in Wisconsin. So we encourage Wisconsin folks to go ahead and look at DWD's website at dwd.wisconsin.gov. They have some good information about avoiding unemployment scams. If you think you are a victim, you should report it to DADCAP or to DWD. But also, just be aware that folks are getting notifications if they haven't applied and things of that nature. So if you haven't applied, alert that, alert DWD, alert the DADCAP, because you could be a victim of identity theft and would need to get some protection right away.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you for calling. I appreciate it. Let's turn to Frank in Green. Hi, Frank. Thank you for calling.
Hello, Larry. I just wanted to state that it seems like the scammers are coming out of the woodwork now. A lot of, the support teams, like for eBay, they no longer have a phone bank. You can't talk to anybody. And it has to be done with a messaging service. And it's very... It's not convenient, and it's hard to get your point across. To be safe, I really suggest using a credit card, because as far as if you can purchase it with a credit card, because the credit card company is really supportive on making sure that you get what you paid for.
Yeah, that's been my experience as well with credit card companies. Michelle, comment?
Yeah, he makes a great point that there are federal protections if transactions don't go as promoted when using a credit card. Consumers have up to 60 days from when a charge will appear on their credit card to dispute that charge with the credit card company through a formal process. And so there are protections built in when using a credit card that might not be there with other types of payments. Cash and wiring and gift cards are often, it just disappears. And when you're using electronic fund transfers, such as a PayPal or Venmo, that money could also be gone, and those same kinds of protections may not be there. But if a company promotes a particular type of protection, then they would need to honor that and follow through. But a credit card has federal protections built in and have been there for many years, so we often encourage that, because the money's also traceable in a form by law enforcement should a company prove to be fraudulent in nature. So it's also a good tool for law enforcement when consumers use credit cards.
Frank, thanks again. Let's go to Lisa in Oconomowoc. Hi, Lisa.
Hello, can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Oh, okay, great. My call is sort of similar to the previous one. Not eBay, but Craigslist, and which to me is a scary service to use. I'm just wondering if there are protections for people using Craigslist. My example is this. My daughter, in the past week, has been looking for sublets or short-term apartments in the Milwaukee area, and she found some that looked really cool, pictures, et cetera, and turns out that it was a scam, and that they took the pictures and description directly from a different listing from Zillow, put it on there, and were charging half the price.
No.
So it looked like really desirable, and the guy was convincing, like, oh, I just really need to get get this rented. I'm going to be somewhere for 6 months, blah, blah, blah. Craigslist, I think, in general, is just fraught with scammers. And I just am wondering if what protections, if any, are there on that service?
Hmm. Laura, do you comment or Michelle?
Well, I can take a stab. Michelle might know specifics about Craigslist. I would imagine that like any platform, there are some obligations of truthfulness and veracity about what you're posting. And if you were to report to Craigslist that there was fraudulent behavior, they would remove that person. So a couple things. I'm not sure if you said your daughter was actually scammed. I hope not. But this is a very prevalent scam, the apartment rental scam. And I think sort of piggybacking off of the previous caller, it's really hard to do your due diligence now in this COVID world because it's hard to get people on the phone. If there's long lines, you're sort of pushed into this chat room format. But that's what needs to happen when you're doing something like renting an apartment, really verifying that that house exists, that it's actually for sale, that you're talking to the correct owner, and that takes some work. And particularly if you're using platforms like Craigslist, Vrbo and Airbnb, for instance, have pretty robust policies about that, and you can talk to them if you've been taken advantage of. I'm not certain about Airbnb, or I'm sorry, about Craigslist. Do you have any thoughts about Craigslist, Michelle?
Well, Craigslist has an area, an advisory and warning area, and they do encourage that if a consumer encounters bad behavior, that get reported so that they can vet that individual to be sure that other postings might be removed or monitored. And so it's really important that you or your daughter do respond and let Craigslist know about this activity if you haven't already. But you are correct, and Laura said it as well. That tends to be a platform where we do see a lot of mischief behavior, and the rental scam and vacation rental scams are often route back to a Craigslist source for individuals, just as you described it, with a photo lifted from another real estate listing or vacation rental listing, and it's not the real owner. So some steps you can take to check is, you know, look at the city assessor records for the address you're looking at to see if things align with the owner or property rental individual with who's promoting the lease, the rental, and do a Google Map search as well. And if the photos don't align with the property address given because they've lifted one, you'll see that discrepancy as well through those Google Map images that are there in street views and things, and it won't even be the same building or property there. So there's a couple tips you can do to do some verifications.
Lisa, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. I was thinking about waiting on the phone for to get somebody to talk to. I don't know, it was about a week or two, a couple of weeks ago. I was held online or on hold, and I thought, you know what, I'm just going to stay as long as I need to stay online. So I plugged my phone. I kept it on, plugged it in. So the battery didn't die, and it was 5 hours, almost exactly.
Oh, my gosh.
But I was able, you know, I had it on speakerphone, so, and I just set it aside, and I would, and every once in a while, I'd get a message saying, do you still want to hold to talk to someone? And I would press one for yes or whatever it was. And it was almost 5 hours that I was able to do other work and so forth. So I wasn't just sitting there holding onto the phone, but it was 5 hours.
Well, I hope it had good hold music.
I don't recall the hold music. Actually, there wasn't much of anything. So anyway, I got through and they actually resolved my issue. So I had to wait 5 hours, though. Oh, my goodness. Carrie in Menasha has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Carrie.
Yeah, hey. Took my truck in, got it painted, some rust, you know, touch-up stuff, and they didn't do the job that they wanted, or that they said they were going to do. And I know I can file a complaint with you guys. Is that correct on auto work?
Yes, we have an auto repair regulation in place, and depending upon what your work order indicated was included in the work that you were going to have done and agreed to, and whether or not that was done. The law doesn't cover quality of work or workmanship, but it does cover, you know, if they say they're going to put new brakes on, that you receive new brakes versus they just changed the oil type situation. So it would be, if you've tried dealing with the repair shop, the auto body shop, and you're not getting anywhere, it's worth filing a complaint to see if our assistant can help produce a different result. And you can do that online at datcp.wi.gov or at calling our hotline 1-800-422-7128, and they can send out a complaint form.
So datcp.wi.gov online or call 1-800-422-7128.
That's right.
All right, Carrie, thank you so much. Good luck. Appreciate the call. Loretta in Eau Claire, turning to you now. Hi, Loretta.
Hi. I have had numerous phone calls back through February. Discover card, and it's for a Nate somebody, and no one else in my house but the dog and cat and I are living here. And I'd love to just say, you have the wrong number, but I'm afraid to call and answer anything. And there's two different phone calls from Phoenix, Arizona, and from New Albany, Ohio.
Hmm. And they're going into your voicemail that you can hear. Is that what you're saying? You have a okay.
Yes.
So you can block phone numbers. It's you're right not to answer it. Good for you. If you don't recognize the number and you think it's a fraudulent scammer, it probably is. And so you can get those numbers blocked either. By calling your service provider. And you can also file a complaint with the department, because if they're continuing to call you and you're on the do not call list, that would be a violation of the do not call list. And we can certainly look into them in that way. But it sounds like they could just be a robocaller that's continuing to call you. And ideally, if you stop, if you aren't answering, it'll stop at some point. But I encourage you to call and report it to your carrier and let them know that you're getting the same calls from this number, because in the previous year there was a federal law that was passed, the TRACED Act, that is supposed to be calling these auto calls and vetting them to see if they're coming from an original source. And so if this number hasn't gotten caught, the service provider should be able to help you with that.
All right. Loretta, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Linda in Silver Cliff will go to you next. Hi, Linda.
Hi. I just heard you talking about the Craigslist thing with the real estate, and my sister got scammed with that deal. We were going to rent a place at Lambeau Field for the weekend, and there was one on Craigslist, and it showed the address and the pictures, and I drove by and they were the right pictures. So my sister rented this place, and we got there and the guy wasn't there, and all of a sudden the fellow pulled up and it was the actual owner who said, you guys have been scammed, that they had done it to him several times. They go to VRBO and take the actual pictures and put it with their own ad on Craigslist. So you think it's real because it's got the right address and the right pictures, but don't let that fool you.
Yeah. And Linda, in that case, Laura, what should, did Linda, did you report this or?
Yeah, we called the police and they came and, you know, took down all the information, but she never got her money back.
Yeah.
You know, because she had, I forget what, it was something stupid that she did, you know, like wired the money or something.
Oh, no. Well, I think Michelle's advice was just sound advice, which is you know, if you're using a platform like Craigslist, which we know is not vetting these posts, that really you need to go to the registry of deeds and see who owns the property and call that person. So had she done that, that would have been the way to verify that the posting was actually accurate, because either they own it or they would know that somebody is renting it for whatever purpose.
Yeah.
And that seems like a lot of work, but clearly on a platform like Craigslist, which is, I think, meant to be a little easier to post and sell things, but then it has that underside to it, and it doesn't sound like their policies are as robust as perhaps Vrbo and Airbnb. But again, she should report that to Craigslist so that that particular vendor gets removed.
And I think you bring up a good point, Lara, as to the robustness of some of the other platforms that exist, that doing a cross-reference and cross-check, because, Linda, your example said that the owner said that they lifted it off a post he legitimately puts on the Vrbo site. And so if there had been cross-referencing and checking other sites to see if the deal is consistent or the lister is consistent, you'd find those discrepancies as well, in that the Craigslist posting was just too good to be true by comparison to the other locations. So there, you know, a couple more tips for consumers as to how to just check things out and feel a bit more confident. But the wiring money, that's also a really big red flag for scam situations.
Yeah. Thanks again for calling, Linda. Lynn in Platteville emailed, she ordered cleaning product that was advertised for viruses like COVID-19. Came with a fact sheet listing the ingredients, one of it which was secret, in quotes. She's suspicious and haven't used the product yet. There's no phone number and to reach the makers of the product. They don't respond to emails. The bottles came with the labels that looked like they were printed on a home computer running out of ink. And when she looked at the company's address, it looked like it was located in a residential area in a Florida city.
So that is something we hope she reports to DadCap, because it does sound like a scam. Look, COVID, in terms of what we know that is out there on surfaces and on your hands, soap and water gets rid of it, and basic cleaning supplies get rid of it. So promises about some special potion that's going to get rid of the virus on surfaces is a scam. And in terms of similar scams related to the virus, you know, we're seeing that around testing, we're seeing it around vaccines, we're seeing it around cures. All of that is really preying on people's fears and the vulnerability that we all feel during this crisis. So we encourage folks that if you're looking for resources about how to keep yourself safe and healthy, that you go to trusted resources of information. You go to the CDC, you go to the World Health Organization. The Department of Health Services here in Wisconsin has an excellent website on COVID, and it gets into information about mask donning and doffing, how to keep yourself clean and safe, how to grocery shop, all kinds of really good science-based information from trusted sources. And then when you want to go out and do your shopping, you can go to probably Target or Walmart or any of the stores that you typically frequent and find what you need to keep yourself safe.
Let's take another call. Michael in Madison, your turn now. Hi, Michael.
Yeah, hi. How are you?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Yeah. I have a call. A friend of mine has a unique employment, or shall I say unemployment situation, and actually just got out of a meeting with her. So she works as a commission-based salesperson for one of these tailored clothing companies.
Okay.
And so her salary is entirely based off of commissions from selling. And of course, when the virus hit, her income went down, you know, almost 95%. In the meantime, you know, she was able to kind of go for a couple of months without really a salary, but it's gotten tougher for her. So she applied for unemployment benefits and I think received some. But then she just got a letter from her company telling her that she can no longer apply for unemployment benefits because if she does, it will be like she is giving up her job voluntarily. And they are stating that because she is still technically employed, even though she's not getting paid anything, she can't apply for the unemployment benefits. And apologies, it just started raining really hard here.
we're losing you. I hope. Michelle, a comment?
Yeah, unfortunately, we don't have any authority or expertise or knowledge as it relates to the employment regulation rules and unemployment insurance and benefits there. So I would have to tell Michael that he would need to contact the Department of Workforce Development. I know that there's a line there, but they probably have some great resources on their website that could be reviewed and referenced as to eligibility and been through that, but then also the company aspect side and probably some frequently asked questions that might cover this issue. So I would definitely refer him to Department of Workforce Development for the friend to try and sort this out and get some answers as it relates to this situation.
There we go. Well, good luck to your friend, Michael. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Michelle Ryan, Executive Policy Initiatives Advisor of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection, one of our guests. The other, Laura Sutherland, who's the Administrator for the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. We're taking a look at consumer scams going on during this pandemic period. Some of them are scams that have been around for a long time. Some of them are new twists on an old scam, and some of them are just plain new twists. Michelle Ryan, one of our guests, Laura Sutherland, the other, both with the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection within the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Join in, 800-642-1234, email at ideas@wpr.org. And in Madison emailed, she'd heard a lot of masks coming in now are counterfeit, meaning they don't meet the medical grade of protection specified. If you see a box of masks in a store, is there a way to know if it's counterfeit?
Well, I'm not sure I entirely understand. Is there a way to know whether or not it's an N95 mask? I'm not familiar with their actual verbiage on their mask, but I would imagine if you're in a store and it says N95, you could talk to the store manager to confirm. I know N95 actually has brought a fair amount of lawsuits for copyright infringement and against third-party suppliers for bulk buying and selling them, and I'm not sure what's going to come of those lawsuits, but if you're buying an N95 mask from a legitimate location, a big box store that we all know, you should be able to rely on the name N95 that is posted on that. If you're buying them online from a non-verified supplier, I would caution you because we are seeing a fair amount of scams in that arena, and it's much more difficult, as we've heard from all the other callers, to verify the veracity of posts like that.
We have Norman in Wausau on the phone with us. Norman, hello. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, I want to ask your guests, what can you do, what recourse do you have when you buy something like I ended up buying a car a few years back, and there was free car wash as long as you had the car and you had a good price on oil changes. And then about a year later, the dealer sold the dealership to another person. And when I went back, they said, well, we don't have to honor that because we bought the company and we're not a part of the people that made the promise to you. And I also found that on some items you buy where they got a lifetime warranty or a 25 or a 5-year warranty. And then when you try to contact them, you find they're out of business. And that's it. And I've tried to contact the people, the guests you have on the program today, and also the district or the attorney, the state attorney in the state in which the company was, and they couldn't do anything either. So I don't know if anything new has happened with that sort of shenanigans or not.
Yeah. Laura, anything there?
Well, I was going to punt that to Michelle. I mean, I think that representations about a lifetime warranty have to be adhered to. But if the company doesn't exist anymore, then that's obviously there's nothing you can do about that. In terms of businesses being bought by other businesses, they typically have to honor the contracts of the prior owners. And if they don't, they have to reach out to the owner, the contractual relationships that they have, and rectify that. Michelle, do you have any thoughts on that? Have you seen complaints like that?
Yeah, so as it relates to the warranty, I'm thinking back to a particular appliance store that went out of business. It closed. And what happened is because the warranties are covered by an insurance company, that we had information through the complaint in order to follow, you know, who held the warranty, really. And that's usually part of your warranty information as a route and a path to try and get that honored. So in some cases, that can be that path can be followed and identified, and that warranty could still be good based on those original terms and conditions and how that business closed or went out of business or bankruptcy issues. And as it relates to the car wash issue, sometimes it depends if that was part of your contract or if it was just an enticement and promotion, then, and depending upon the purchase of the business, it could or could not be part of how things transfer, and those free car washes and decent oil changes, they may or may not be honored by a new owner, depending upon, how that, if it truly was a purchase of a business or if a business closed and then someone else just brought the property and opened up a new business there that also sold cars. So there's a lot of detail there, and you could file a complaint about it, and we could look into the issue, or depending upon how it's tied to the car sale, it might go to the Department of Transportation.
All right. There you go, Norman. Thank you. The number, again, was 1-800-422-7128.
That's
for
right.
The Department of Consumer Protection. Let's take another call. By the way, you can join in too at 800-642-1234 with your question or comment. 800-642-1234. Mike in Minocqua, it's your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hi. How you doing, everybody? I ordered a blood pressure cuff. It was a wrist blood pressure cuff from an outfit called Home Medics. I just went online and it seemed like a good price for what I needed. And I got it in the mail, and it says it has the name of Walgreens on it. I mean, that's who, they're somehow related to Walgreens, or they sell it through Walgreens. Well, the thing hasn't worked at all. I mean, it's, I changed batteries, and it's not a battery problem, and I've tried changing fit and all this kind of stuff, and it keeps coming up error. So when I wrote back to the company, they say, you know, that I called them first. They said because of COVID, they're not taking any phone calls. Their debt office is closed. And then I said, then I wrote them an email, and I've written them twice. And each time it comes back that, you know, thanks for my inquiry. Representatives are working as quickly as possible. And I'm running out of things to do. And it also says, don't take this back to the retailer. So would my best recourse be to take it to Walgreens or just to wait on it? I mean, it's like they're using the COVID thing sort of as a little bit of a front. I mean, I mean, it's not like it costs $1 million, but it costs $40 and it doesn't work at all. And I want to send it back, you know.
How long ago did you purchase it?
A little bit more than a month ago. I would say at least in April, you know, if not March. So, you know, it goes back and, you know, I have the number and everything.
Yeah.
So, and I've written them, like I said, I've written them twice now.
So you've done a good job of documenting the issues and reaching out to them. I would encourage you to go to Walgreens. I do think one of the things you're going to run into is a return deadline. You know, oftentimes you have to do it within a certain period of time, 30 or 60 days, and some companies are extending it. But I would pursue talking to a human being at Walgreens to see if that helps and if they have any insight as to how you can get a refund. Clearly, lots of businesses have very long lines right now and are not responsive to returns. And if you still run into problems, you know, this is a perfect time to actually file a complaint with the department, and we can try to help mediate that issue. So if they're not responsive and the quality of the product is not what it says they said it was going to be, and you can't return it within the guidelines of their return policy, then that's something that we could be able to help you with. But I would encourage you to try to talk to a human being first and see if they can give you any insight.
Mike, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Barbara emailed to say she and her husband share an email address and access it from two different devices. They're 70 plus years old and are aware they are targeted because of their age. They're getting those seemingly innocuous emails that appear to be from someone one of them knows. At first, they think it's a friend, a relative. The email says something like, "Hi, Bill, and Bill and I are doing well, and we are enjoying this joke and want to share it with you. A link appears below." Should they just delete those?
Yes. We'll just give the simple answer. Yes. If they are curious if it's a friend that they know, pick up the phone, give them a call, check to see how everyone's doing, and say, "Did you send me a joke by email?" And I'm 99.9% sure they're going to get a response of, "No, I didn't send you an email with a joke." And so just delete that. Don't click on anything. Don't handle that email in any way. Because if they were, you know, tech hacker type people, they'd be able to look at that and hover and see the likely misdirection and spoofing of the sender and who sent it, and it's likely not from their friends at all.
Mm. JD and Spooner emailed that in the age of cell phones, he finds it very easy to avoid and dismiss scams when a call comes in that's not on his contact list or not one that he recognizes. He just lets it go to voicemail. Any caller who doesn't leave a message alerts him right away. It's a not a worthy call. And any legitimate caller will leave a message. Numbers that he doesn't recognize end up on his blocked list. So that's pretty good advice, wouldn't you say?
That is good advice, and I follow that advice. So and it works well for me. In addition, I think I mentioned earlier there is this new act called the TRACE Act that is required carriers to put in authentication software that should bring down the number of scam calls. And certainly the department is seeing fewer complaints from consumers about scam robocalls. But I encourage folks to reach out to their courier if they're continuing to get calls that come through. That's information that your courier would probably like and could help you in getting those calls stopped as well.
Phil emailed, says that considering the magnitude of the problem and the public's aggravation involved, it seems that the feds and state government should be more aggressive about processing online fraud. What is the effort by the federal government and state to coordinate together to put these bad guys out of business?
The feds do bring cases every year, and we've seen a number of actions in related to fraud, online fraud related to COVID-19 as well, and promotions and advertisements that are out there and false cure claims. But our partnership is strong in that we meet regularly to discuss cases we're working, exchange information, and we also supply them to a law enforcement database, all the complaints that we receive from consumers. So there is great sharing of that information on a state to federal and federal level. So we're all communicating.
Michelle Reinen and Laura Sutherland with the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection within the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade and Consumer Protection. They'll be with us right up till 12:30 today. So join in at 800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. We'll take a quick look at the news and weather, find out what else is in store, and then we'll be back. You stay with us. Thanks so much for joining us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at consumer scam issues today with our two guests from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade and Consumer Protection, Laura Sutherland, the administrator for the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Michelle Reinen is the Executive Policy Initiatives Advisor. I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments. You need advice on how to handle a consumer problem? Give a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. There's some good news for those with federally held student loans, as I understand it. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so that's right. There is some good news, and we need some. Under the CARES Act, a federal act, borrowers with federally held loans will be automatically put into a six-month forbearance. It's retroactive to March 13th. But these are just these aren't all federal loans, but some of the federal loans that are eligible. And what that means is during that time, no payments need to be made and no interest will accrue during the forbearance period. And that's going to last until September 30th. So all auto debit payments will be automatically suspended. But students are encouraged and should reach out to cancel their auto pay via the servicer's website to ensure that they're not being deducted during the suspension if they don't want the money to be deducted. Now, of course, if the student wants to continue to pay, the student borrower, they can, and if they can afford to pay, and they should talk to their servicer about that. The other interesting thing about this is it doesn't cover all federal loans. It just covers some of them. So you should also be in touch with your servicer to make sure you know which ones are covered, and it doesn't cover private loans, obviously, so you need to continue to pay those. The other thing that folks need to know is, like everything else we've talked about, there are scammers that are preying on student borrowers because this new federal package has come out. Anytime that there's money coming from the federal government or the state government, there are scammers in the wings waiting to take advantage of you and misrepresent what's actually happening. So you don't have to do anything to avail yourself to this program. It automatically goes into forbearance. The insurance interest automatically stops, and the payments automatically stop. So if anybody is telling you to apply and to pay a fee or to send any valid information, like any of your personal identifying information, in order to be part of that program, that is a scam. They're trying to take advantage of you and your money and your identity. So don't fall for that. And again, be sure to just check in with your loan service provider. Find out which one of your loans are covered by this program. Determine whether or not you want to participate. Some people may still be able to pay. And if you don't want to pay, make sure that those auto payments have stopped. And if they didn't stop, you can actually get a refund for the ones that they kept taking out during this forbearance period. So all those options are available to you. The Department of Education, the U.S. Department of Education, has a lot of resources about this program. And then, of course, you can talk to your loan servicer about it as well.
Good information. Let's take a call. Nick in Green Bay, it's your turn now. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, I'm pretty angry about this. Last summer, about this time last year, I bought a washer from Samsung at Home Depot. I loved it. It was a great machine. About 3 months ago, it started making a noise, and I called them. They sent the technician out and said, nope, that's normal operation noise. I'm like, okay, great. So then, about 2 months ago, it just stopped working. I've been on the phone with them. I've called them 50 times. They sent our technician. He says, yep, the clutch motor's broke. He's like, I'll order parts. So after a week away, I call up and I said, what's up with the repair? And they're like, oh, he closed it out. I'm like, how do you close out a repair that hasn't been done? I filed a complaint with the business bureau about this. And last month I got sick of it. We went on and bought a new washer. And I told the guy that. He's like, well, we'll get you a refund. I've been fighting for a refund now for over a month. And like I said, I've already filed a complaint with the business bureau. I don't even know where to go anymore. So any suggestions? Because I got hair yet, but it's slowly going away.
Michelle, yes. Or go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. So, Nick, you could certainly file a complaint with DADCAP, with Consumer Protection, and that would be at datcp.wi.gov. And we would try and help mediate that as well. We're different from the Better Business Bureau in that they also do mediation, as do we, but we'll look at it in reference to any state law that could apply as it relates to consumer protection and any representation they may have made to you when they sold you the product, or any warranty or honor that they may have had in relation to its performance, any representations there. So we'll have that ability to look at it in a little bit different perspective. So if you want to file a different complaint, you could go ahead and do that. You can also reach us on our hotline at 1-800-422-7128.
There you go, Nick. And I would urge you to go ahead and file a complaint with the department for sure. Thank you for calling. Claudia in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Claudia.
Hi, thank you. I recently ordered a 5-cube storage cabinet from the company Wayfair online, and I was looking specifically for a quality piece of furniture that was made in the USA. And I found something that was what I was looking for, and it was about $360. When I received the product, it was in a box, and it was called Good Housekeeping product, and it was shipped from Walmart, and it was made in China. And I looked that up online and found out that you can buy those things from Walmart at about $75. So I was quite disappointed and upset that I was given a Chinese-made $75 product instead of a U.S.-made $360 product.
So when you bought it online, it said it was made in the USA, and you purchased it, and it turned out it was not from the USA.
That's right.
And you purchased it directly from Walmart?
No, I purchased from Wayfair.
Oh, Wayfair. Sorry. Mm-hmm. So there are laws about representations, whether things are made in the USA, and there's both federal and then, of course, in the state, if something is misrepresented, if there's a declaration or a representation on an item and that turns out to be false, that would be a violation of the law. One of the complicating things about the made in the USA issue is that sometimes portions of it are made in the USA, or it's assembled in the USA, and the product comes from the items that it's made of are from the USA, but it's assembled elsewhere. So, like many things, people try to do an end run around the law, if you will, and try to say that something is made in the USA and when in fact it's not. But if it's deceptive, and when a consumer reads it and it looks as though it's made in the USA and it's not, then that would be a violation of the law. But I couldn't possibly make a determination like that on the phone, but it is something that is curious. So if you want to file a complaint, we would be happy to look at that. It would depend on the facts to determine whether or not it really was falsely represented, but that is a garden variety deception claim, and we see a lot of those.
So Claudia, again, she could call the 1-800-422-7128 number, mm-hmm. or go online to datcp.wi.gov and file a complaint. Claudia, does that help?
Yes. Can you tell me the website again, please?
It's the letters DATCP.
Okay.
Dot WI for Wisconsin dot gov, G-O-V.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Ed in Sauk City next. Hi, Ed.
Yep. My question is, I'm getting calls from, and I don't know how they get my cell phone number, or I don't know how they get my land phone number, and they're saying your warranty will expire. My vehicle is really old. I've never had a warranty on it before, and I'm wondering what the scam is on that.
Okay, Michelle?
Well, that is an oldie but a goodie. No, it's not good in that we need you to not respond to that or give any information, but it's a scam that tries to entice people by throwing them off balance because those warranties last for years, and if they happen to catch you with the same vehicle, maybe you forget if you ever bought an extended warranty, and they're trying to get you to get a new service contract there and receive your information and your payment. So it is, if you are on the do not call list, a potential violation of that is they're offering to sell you something by phone, and you have indicated if you're on do not call that you don't want solicitations. So we encourage you to file a complaint because we do want to follow up with these companies as it relates to do not call and looking at the product that they're trying to sell you and the representations they're making, because if they've never done business with you before and don't have accurate information, they're misrepresenting to entice you into purchasing their product. This can also come by letter. We've seen it in Wisconsin that they mail you a number of mailings as well in relation to different vehicles. So whether it be by phone or by mail, we'd like consumers to file complaints about this so we can track and look at what the representations are that the company is making and how they may or may not be following Wisconsin law.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate that. You can join in too, 800-642-1234. Give a call with your questions or comments. We're seeing some fake charities being used to play on people's good intentions. How can you tell if an organization is fake or legitimate?
That's a great question, and it's one that I'm glad you asked. I'm always frustrated that in a time like this, when people want to be helpful and giving, that scammers take advantage of that. But of course they do. So in the state of Wisconsin, charities have to be registered with the Department of Financial Institutions. So we encourage folks to first go there and determine whether or not the charity is properly registered. You can also and should do your homework on what the charity is giving to and whether or not it has any complaints against it, and whether or not it's giving the amount of money that you think it should be giving to the particular program that you're donating to. So you can do that in a couple of places. You can research that at the BBB. They have a nice place to look at complaints and also looking at charities. You can also go to Charity Watcher, and there's some information about charities there. And you should also look at DFI to see whether or not there's a scam related to a charity. You're also going to see a lot of giving in smaller venues, in smaller platforms that people just stand up immediately to try to help, like a GoFundMe site and things like that. And those are good avenues for giving. But again, you need to be careful that you understand that the money is going where you think it's going to go to. And so oftentimes when it's a smaller outfit that decides to start raising money, if they get a lot of money, they don't have the infrastructure to dole it out in the same way some of these larger charitable organizations that are staffed and skilled at getting resources to the people they're trying to help. So just take that into consideration when you're looking at smaller sort of individual efforts that have just popped up in response to a crisis. Oftentimes, they could be fraud, but if they're not fraud, they may not have the mechanisms in place to really get the money to the places that they want if they find themselves sitting on a lot of money.
Another call coming in. Tahere in Stevens Point, I believe, is next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Yeah, I was going to say, especially since you were talking about sometimes older people getting caught up in scams, my dad is 85, and I think what's pretty important is if an older person or anybody has somebody to go to about mail or phone or email, that you don't belittle them when they ask you, because I think, one, that discourages them and makes them feel stupid, which isn't helpful, and also perpetrators are so nice when they talk to them, and they're very, slimy, and so if you're very open to being like, oh, no, I don't think that's a real thing, I don't think that $500 cruise is right, you know, just toss it out. You know, just say it plainly and nicely.
That's a good tip, isn't it, Laura?
Yeah, it's great feedback, and I really appreciate that. And one thing I will say, in sort of piggybacking on that, is in fact, what we're seeing in the data is that older citizens are not scammed as often as the younger ones are. So they are savvy and aware and paying attention. And we know that from this program. We often get calls from a lot of older citizens, and they are calling to tell us about a scam that they've averted, and they knew how to take care of it. So I totally agree that older citizens can be targeted, but oftentimes are perfectly capable of understanding when they're being scammed. The problem, of course, is they have more money and there's more at stake often, or they can have more money. And so when they do get scammed, they're getting scammed for more money than younger citizens. But younger citizens are actually falling for scams more often than the older ones.
Maybe they're online more.
Yep.
Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. I still like the idea of not belittling old or young, as a matter of fact, with if they've been scammed.
Absolutely.
Sure. Daniel in Toma, it's your turn. Hi, Daniel.
Yes. Yesterday, a construction company was going by. I never called them. We weren't searching, but they showed them our driveway. Approached my dad. He's 86 years old. And they put a strip of blacktop down. I guess, you know, he might have wanted to do it, but he doesn't make decisions. He got old timers, and then he gave him a bill for $4,000.
Oh.
He gave him $1,500, said, you go us later, and we'll come back. Now, I'm just wondering, is there a protection? Because he should not make this decision, you know, without paying it up front, or, you know, he doesn't have the funds to pay for this. So now they're asking me to go get a loan to help because it's already done. And it ain't the whole driveway. It's only a strip, a blacktop. Is there a protection behind that? Because for one, I think they overcharged them.
Yeah.
And for what they did. If they did the whole driveway, it's a different story.
Yeah.
But then they put a strip down and we got them left. They're from London Station. I got their number and everything.
So what should Daniel be doing there on behalf of his relative?
So in this case, there are one, it sounds like a very common scam. We often see workers come state to state spring through fall in doing door-to-door blacktop sales, if you will, often indicating that you can get a really great deal because they have leftover product from a local job that they did or a neighbor's job type situation. And they will agree to one price on the spot, put money down, but then it will be, and then they may not come and finish the job, or the work might be really inferior quality. Or the other thing is they might then demand much more money at the end and increase the price to what they agreed to verbally. So we really encourage people to not engage with the door-to-door, in-the-moment sale. Plan what you need, get the written contract, and then get everything documented and proceed that way. If you are responding instantaneously, try to get it in writing if they will provide it to you. But in this case, and don't usually ever let these individuals in your home because, again, they're just randomly going door to door and you don't know who they are. But you can also see if they have a municipal seller's permit. Many municipalities require that door-to-door sales individuals have a seller's permit for that municipality. If they can't produce that, if yours requires it, then that's an indicator. They try to target more our senior population, our older population, and your dad being 86, as you indicated, would could fit in that category. And so I would engage with your local law enforcement. See if there's been other reports of this company going door to door and demanding more money after the job is done. And then also file a complaint with Consumer Protection because on its basis, it sounds like some issues under the home improvement law may not have been followed. If they took any money down, then there should be a written contract where the final price has been agreed to already. So we'd want to take a look at it, but local law enforcement can engage with them in the moment, especially if they've had any other complaints or issues going on.
Oh, there we go, Daniel. And again, the number for a complaint is, I would call the local police, but the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection number is 1-800-422-7128, 800-422-7128, or go online to datcp.wi.gov. Well, here we are out of time. Laura and Michelle, it's been a pleasure. Once again, you're back on Thursday, August 6th, and we'll do this all over again. Thank you both so much.
Thank you for having us.
Sounds good. Take care.
Michelle Reinen and Laura Sutherland from the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Great to have them with us, and they'll be back August 6th. So, tomorrow on Garden Talk, Aaron Presley from Olbrich Botanical Garden will be back to talk about different kinds of mulch, among other things. In the meantime, thank you for listening. Please stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.